Oh. child, Shnupad.
Paramahamsa, Harvardacharya, Paul Sutetta, Sutashi, Shimad, His Divine Grace, Gosami, Srila Prabhupada, Jai,
Iskan, Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, Jai, Ananta Koti, Vaishnava Vrinda, Jai. Namacharya Shilahuila Stakur Kijai. Friends, say, Koho Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Raunichinanda Shiadwaita Gadad Har Shivasidhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Kijai. Shishi Radhakrishna Gopikopadath Shayam Kunda Radhakunda Gidi Govardhan Kijai. Vrindavadam Kijai. Maturidam Kijai. Jagadatha Sami Kajai Mudamani Kajai Shimadi Lasi Devi Kajai Sama Veda Vakta Vrindi Kajai Gaur Premilanda Hari 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 Ho. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious the assembled devotees. Alright, so I am going to make a little announcement about the Vyas Puja. And I'll make that also at the end, too. Also, of course, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Padanta Swamini Namani Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nevashesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Dejatarnia. I guess I should also... No, I don't want to type it right now. So tomorrow maybe I'll type it in the text window or the next day. So the Vyas Puja this year... Strange to be advertising my own Vyas Puja. We will have it two times. Of course, there'll be a private one in Brisbane this weekend, but that's, don't even worry about that. It's only for the Brisbane people. So we're going to have it two times for those online. One will be on the 16th of October at 11 a.m. East Coast, U.S. time. You can figure out your own time. So that means for the U.K., it's 5 o'clock p.m. And Indian Standard Time, it's 8 o'clock p.m. And Central European Time, it's... Oh, sorry, U.K. is 4 o'clock. Central European Time, it's 5 o'clock. Okay. And for those in the South Pacific... It will be on the 16th of October also, but this is South Pacific time, 8 a.m. Sydney time, 7 a.m. Brisbane time for those who won't be attending the Brisbane one this weekend, 9 a.m. Fiji time, and 10 a.m. in Auckland time, and all that will be on the same Zoom channel. And also on YouTube. Okay, let's proceed with the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And there's a notice on that on my Facebook page about it too. And hopefully tomorrow, maybe I'll just put it in the chat window. Okay, so Omagana Timidanda Shaganan Janal Shilakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yena Tasmai Shi Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances under the lotus feet of my spiritual masters, Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada, who kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So we're continuing with our study of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 15, about Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And so without further ado, we're going to go back to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. All right. Now, this is going to be a very interesting story today. This is about Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's son-in-law, Amoga. So let's rewind this a little bit. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is at the house of Bhattacharya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And he is taking prasadam. And Bhattacharya and his wife, Shati, have prepared elaborate prasadam for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with tons and tons of prasadam. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has been complaining, why is there so much? I'm supposed to be a sannyasi, I'm not supposed to eat that much. However, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya has the argument that in Lord Jagannath's temple, because you are Lord Jagannath, you're eating like much more than this. So just sit down and eat what's on your plate. And it's amazing preparation. There's a whole list of different preparations that Sati and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had made for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it's amazing, 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 amazing tasting prasadam. So, here is a monkey wrench that comes into the whole scene. And that monkey wrench is known as Amoga, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's son-in-law. All right, let us go. Hena kalayamoga bhattacharyera jamata kulina nindakaten ho sathi kanyara bharata. Okay. Excuse me. At this time, Bhattacharya's son-in-law Amoga, the husband of his daughter Sati, arrived there. Although born in an aristocratic Brahmin family, Amoga was a great fault finder and blasphemer. You got to be really careful about that. It's one of the offenses on chanting to blaspheme the Supreme Personality of God, to fault find with the Supreme Personality of God or his devotees or his holy land. So, Bhojana dekite chahe asite na pare late hate Bhattacharya achena duryare. Amoga wanted to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu eat, but he was not allowed to enter. Indeed, the Bhattacharya guarded the threshold of his house with a stick in his hand. What a son-in-law. Because he wanted to criticize Lord Chaitanya. Sometimes you find envious people that just looking for faults. Prabhupada compared these envious people, the Vedic literatures compare these envious people to flies. Because flies land on stool. Stool is excrement, in case you didn't know. So they go immediately to the dirtiest thing. So they're looking for fault. For example, someone who is criticizing the moon may look at the moon and say, the moon, it has so many spots in it. And that's fault-finding, because the moon is very beautiful, very brilliant, and you ignore the spots. But some people see the spots and not the moon. Those are fault-finders, professional fault-finders. And we see that sometimes we're giving class and there's sometimes professional fault-finders there. Tenho yati prasada dite haila anamana amoga si anadeki kariye nindana. However, as soon as the Bhattacharya began distributing prasad and was a little inattentive, Amoga came in. Seeing the quantity of food, he began to blaspheme. Because, as I mentioned before, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was eating a humongous amount of food. So, what's that beeping? Eyane triptaya dashabara jana ekila sanyasi kare eteka bhakshana. This much food is sufficient to satisfy 10 or 12 men, but this sannyasi alone is eating so much. Phew. Shunite Bhattacharya ulati chagila tanra avadana deki Amoga Palahila. As soon as Amoga said this, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya turned his eyes upon him. Seeing the Bhattacharya's attitude, Amoga immediately left. Bhattacharya lati lanamari te daila palaila mogatara lagana poela. The Bhattacharya ran after him to strike him with a stick, but Amoga fled so fast that the Bhattacharya could not catch him because he was an old man. Tabe gali shapadite. Not Amoga was an old man, the Bhattacharya was an old man. Bhattacharya la ninda shuni mahaprabhu hasate lakila. The Bhattacharya then began to curse his son-in-law and call him ill names. When the Bhattacharya returned, he saw that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was laughing to hear him criticize Amoga. Shuni shatira mata shiribuke gatamare sati rondi hayuka iha bale bare bare. When Shati's mother, the Bhattacharya's wife, heard of this incident, she immediately began to strike her head and chest, saying again and again, let Sati become a widow. In other words, she's basically cursing her daughter to become a widow, to have her husband die. I mean, that's a really heavy, heavy thing in Indian society. That shows how much devotion they had for Lord Chaitanya. They were much more concerned with Lord Chaitanya than they were with their family members. Dunara dukha deki prabhu duna prabodhya dunhare hate bojana kaila dushtahana. Seeing the lamentation of both husband and wife, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tried to pacify them. According to their desire, he ate the prasadam and was very satisfied. Achamana karanna patadila mukavasa tulasi manjari lavanga elachi rasa vasa. After Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu finished eating, the Bhattacharya poured water for the Lord to wash his mouth, hands, and legs and offered him flavored spices, tulasi manjaris, cloves, and cardamom. Sarvange paraila Prabhura Malya Chandana Dandavatana Vale Sadayanya Vachana. The Bhattacharya then placed a flower garland over Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and smeared his body with sandalwood pulp. After offering obeisances, the Bhattacharya submitted the following humble statement. Nindakarai te tama ainu nijakare e aparada prabhu Shamakara More, I brought you to my home just to have you blasphemed. This is a great offense. Please excuse me, I beg your pardon. Prabhu kahe ninda nahe sahaja kahila ihate tamara kiva parada kahila. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, what Amoga said is correct, therefore it is not blasphemy. What is your offense? In other words, Amoga said he was eating as much as 10 or 20 other men, and that was correct. But he was saying it with the mood of criticism. That's a difference. Etabali Mahaprabhu chalila bhavane bhattacharya tanragare gela tanra sane. After saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left and returned to his residence. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya followed him. Prabhu pade padi bahu Atmaninda kaila tanre shantakari prabhu gare bhathaila. Falling down at the Lord's feet, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said many things in self-reproach. The Lord then pacified him and sent him back to his home. Gariyasi Bhattacharya satira matasane apana nindiya kichu valena vachane. After returning to his home, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya consulted with his wife, the mother of Sati. After personally condemning himself, he began to speak as follows. Chaitanya Goshaniraninda Shunila Gyahahite Tarivada Kaila Haya Papa Prayas Chite. If the man who blasphemed Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is killed, his sinful action may be atoned. So purport, the Hari Bhakti Vilas, 10th, 3, 10 to 12, cites the following quotation from the Skanda Purana concerning the blaspheming of a Vaishnava. Yohi bhagavatam lokam upahasam nirgoptama karoti tasya na shanti artha dharma yasya sutaha nindam kurvanti ye muda vaishnavanam mahatmanam patanti pitrivir saradam maharorva sangite hanti nindati vairvishti Vaishnavanna vinandati krudyate yati no harsham darshane patananishat. In a conversation between Markandeya and Bhagiratha, it is said, "My dear king, one who derides an exalted devotee loses the results of his pious activities, his opulence, his reputation, and his sons. Vaishnavas are all great souls. Whoever blasphemes them falls down to the hell known as Maharorava, accompanied by his forefathers. Whoever kills or blasphemes a Vaishnava, or whoever is envious of a Vaishnava or angry with him, or whoever does not offer him obeisances or feel joy upon seeing him, certainly falls into a hellish condition." Also, the Hari Bhakti Vilas 10.314 gives the following quotation from the Dwaraka Mahatmya. Karapatraischa palyante sutivraryama shashanarahi nindam kurvanti e papa vaishnavanam mahatmanam. In a conversation between Pallad Maharaj and Pali Maharaj, it is said, "Those sinful persons who blaspheme Vaishnavas, who are all great souls, are subjected very severely to the punishment offered by Yamaraj." In the Vedic literature, we find the following statements concerning the blasphemy of Lord Vishnu and his devotees. Ye nindati rishikesham tad bhaktam punya rupinam shatar janmarjitam punyam tesham nashyati nischitam te paschante mahagore kumbhipakke vayanake bokshita kittasangena yavachandra Divakaro Shri Vishnu Avamananad Guru Taram Shri Vaishnavolang Ganam Tadya Dushaka Janang Napashet Purushadamang Thai Sardam Panchaka Janahai Sahava Sang Nakariyet. Those who criticize Lord Vishnu and his devotees lose all the benefits accrued in 100 pious births. Such persons ride in the Kumbhipaka hell and are bitten by worms as long as the sun and moon exist. Ooh. One should therefore not even see the face of persons who blaspheme Lord Vishnu and his devotees. Never try to associate with such persons. In the Bhakti Sandarbha 265, Jiva Goswami quotes from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.74.40 Nindam Bhagavata Srinvams Tatparasya Janashava Tatona Vatiya Sopi Yatyada Sukritachyutaha. If one does not immediately leave upon hearing the Lord or the Lord's devotee blaspheme, he falls down from devotional service. Similarly, Lord Shiva's wife Sati states in Srimad Bhagavatam 4.4.17 Karno vidaya nirayadyadhyakabhaishe dharmavitaryashinivir rivirasyamane chindyatpashaya rushatim asatim prabhuschej jivam asun bhapi tato vishujetsa dharmaha. If one hears an irresponsible person blaspheming the master and controller of religion, he should block his ears and go away if unable to punish him. But if one is able to kill, then one should by force. This does not apply to us. Don't do it. One should by force cut out the blasphemer's tongue and kill the offender, and after that he should give up his own life. So that's not recommended. Do not do that, please. Kimba nijaprana yati kari vimochana vyogyanahe Vishadira Brahmana. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya continued, or if I give up my own life, this sinful action may be atoned. However, neither of these ideas is befitting because both bodies belong to Brahmana, so you're not supposed to kill a Brahmana, especially if you are a Brahmana. And suicide is strictly forbidden. It's actually one of the most sinful things you can do. Why is it sinful? Because if you commit suicide, you become a ghost. And you have the same desires that you have now, the same problems you have now, but you have no gross body to fulfill them, and you're completely frustrated, and you're haunting everybody else to try to fulfill your desires. Not a good idea. Punase na kera mukana dekiva parichaga kailun taranama na lavya. Instead, I shall never see the face of that blasphemer. I reject him and give up my relationship with him. I shall never even speak his name. Satirekaha tare chaduka se haila patita patita haile haile barata chajite uchita. Inform my daughter Sati to abandon her relationship with her husband because he has fallen down. When a husband falls down, it is the wife's duty to relinquish the relationship. So this is important. It's an important instruction that it's not someone's duty to remain with someone who has fallen. In other words, if you want to be Krishna conscious and the other person's a dog, you don't have to remain with them. Srila Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya considered that if Amoga was killed, Amoga were killed, the killer would suffer sinful reactions for killing the body of a Brahmin. For the same reason, it would have been undesirable for the Bhattacharya to commit suicide because he also was a Brahmin. Since neither course could be accepted, the Bhattacharya decided to give up his relationship with Amoga and never see his face. As far as killing the body of a Brahmin is concerned, Srimad Bhagavatam 1753 gives the following injunction concerning a Brahma Bandhu, person born of a Brahmin family but devoid of Brahminical qualities. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Brahma Bandurana Hantavya Ata Thayi Vidarana. The personality of Godhead, Shri Krishna said, a Brahma Bandhu is not to be killed, but if he is an aggressor, he must be killed. Quoting from the Smriti, Srila Sridhara Swami comments on this quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam. Ata Thayi Nam Ayantam Abhivadanta Paradam Jigam Santam Jigam Shiyan Natena Brahma Ha Bhavet. An aggressor intent on killing may be a very learned scholar of Vedanta, yet he should be killed because his envy in killing others. In such a case, it is not sinful to kill a Brahmin. It is also stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 1757 Vapanam Ramanadhanam Stanam niryapanam tatha eshahi brahmabandhunam vado nanyosti daikaha. Cutting the hair from his head, depriving him of his wealth, and driving him from his residence are the prescribed punishments for a brahmabandhu. There is no injunction for killing the body. As far as Sati, the daughter of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, was concerned, she was advised to give up her relationship with her husband. Concerning this, Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.18 states, Napatis na sashan na mochyed ya samupetam ritum. One cannot be a husband if he cannot liberate his dependents from the inevitable death. If a person is not in Krishna consciousness and is bereft of spiritual power, he cannot protect his wife from the path of repeated birth and death. Consequently, such a person cannot be accepted as a husband. A wife should dedicate her life and everything to Krishna for further advancement in Krishna consciousness. If her husband abandons Krishna consciousness and she gives up her connection with him, she follows in the footsteps of the Dvija Putnis, the wives of the Brahmanas, who are engaged in performing sacrifices. The wife is not to be condemned for cutting off such a relationship. In this regard, Sri Krishna assures the Dvija Putnis in Srimad Bhagavatam 10:23:31-32. Patyo Deva apyanu mamvate, manvate, naprittye nuragaya, yanga sango ridhamiha, tanmano mayi yunjun jana, achiran mam avapshita. My dear Dvijapatnis, rest assured that your husbands will not neglect you on your return, nor will your brothers, sons, or fathers refuse to accept you, because you are my pure devotees, not only your relatives, but also people in general, as well as the demigods, will be satisfied with you. Transcendental love for me does not depend upon bodily connection, but anyone whose mind is always absorbed in me will surely very soon come to me for my eternal association. So I just want to cite some references, or what Prabhupada was referring to in this particular verse when he was quoting from the Srimad Bhagavatam from the first canto about Ashwatthama. Now, you don't know because he didn't mention the word Ashwatthama. Ashwatthama was the son of Dronacharya. Dronacharya was a Brahmin who instructed the Pandavas and the Kurus in the military arts. And Ashwatthama was the son of Dronacharya. But although he was the son of Dronacharya, he wasn't qualified to be a Brahmin, even though he was born in a Brahmin family. Therefore, he was known as Brahma Bandhu, or the relative or friend of a Brahmin. So what Ashwatthama did after the Battle of Kurukshetra, he killed the five sleeping sons of the Pandavas. Not only that, but he tried to kill Parikshit, who was within the womb of his mother, Uttara. And so the Pandavas captured him, actually Arjuna captured him, and Arjuna was told by Krishna and Bhima saying, kill him. And then Arjuna was told by Draupadi and also Yudhisthira, don't kill him because he's the son of a Brahmin, and also his mother is still alive and it would not be appropriate. So Arjuna had this sort of conflict to kill him and not kill him simultaneously, especially he wasn't supposed to kill his body or to make him leave his body. You don't kill a body. To make him leave his body because he was in a Brahmin family. That's the injunction. So what happened is that Arjuna made the right decision. He killed Ashwatthama by cutting off his hair and taking the jewel from his forehead and depriving him of his place of residence and driving him away. And Krishna also insulted or cursed Ashwatthama by cursing him to smell bad for like 5,000 years. Ooh. And for no one to go near him. And after that, he would rectify himself. That was the punishment. So anyway, that's what's being referred to here. So in the Vedic injunctions say that when a Brahmin does something heinous like that, he's not to be, let's say, deprived of his body, but he's supposed to be shamed, driven out, and not allowed in polite company anymore. And that's what Krishna and Arjuna did. And Arjuna satisfied Krishna, and he satisfied his brother Bhimsen, and he satisfied Draupadi and Yudhisthira all at the same time. That's great intelligence. Okay, next verse. Patim na patitam jajet. When a husband is fallen, one's relationship with him must be given up. This is a quotation from the Smriti Shastra, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, 7:11:28. Satushalo lupa dakshadharma gya priya sachavak apramata shuchi snigda patim swapati tam vajet. A wife who is satisfied, who is not greedy, who is expert and knows religious principles, and who speaks what is dear and truthful, and is not bewildered, and who is always clean and affectionate, should be very much devoted to her husband, if he is not fallen. Seira tremoga kahan palanagela pratakale tara ishuchika yadi hoila. That night, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's son-in-law fled, and in the morning, he immediately fell sick with cholera. It's a deadly disease. Amoga morena shunikahe vatacharya Sahaya Haiya Daiva Kailamora Karya. When the Bhattacharya heard that Amoga was dying of cholera, he thought, it is the favor of providence that he is doing what I want to do. In other words, at least Krishna is taking care of this. Ishwareta aparada pale tatakshana eta bali pale dwi shastre ravachana. When one offends the Supreme Personality of Godhead, karma immediately takes place. After saying this, he recited two verses from the revealed scriptures. Mahatahi prayatnena hasjasvaratapattibihi asmabiryananushteyam gandharvastad anushtitam. What we have had to arrange with great endeavor by collecting elephants, horses, chariots, and infantry soldiers has already been accomplished by the Gandharvas. This is an interesting story from the Mahabharata. This is a quotation from the Mahabharata, Vanaparva 241.15. Bhimasen made this statement when all the Pandavas were living in exile in the forest. At that time, there was a fight between the Kauravas, that means Duryodhana and his brothers, and the Gandharvas. The Kaurava soldiers were under the command of Karna, but the commander-in-chief of the Gandharvas was able to arrest all the Kauravas by virtue of superior military strength. At that time, Duryodhana's ministers and commanders requested Maharaj Yudhisthira to help. After being thus petitioned, Bhimasen spoke this verse given above, remembering Duryodhana's former nefarious and atrocious activities against them. Indeed, Bhimasen felt it very fitting that Duryodhana and his company were arrested. This could have been accomplished by the Pandavas only with great endeavor. Of course, then, ultimately, the Pandavas, that is Arjuna, saved Duryodhana and his company. And Duryodhana and his company, this is an interesting story, were so upset that they were saved by their arch enemies that Duryodhana decided to basically leave his body. So he went into deep meditation, gave up eating, gave up drinking, and everything like that, and got ready by yogic power to leave his body. But instead of leaving his body, the other demons took him out of his body, while his body was still alive or breathing or whatever, and took him for a pep talk, and they told him, look, you have a great mission to accomplish. Don't worry, because ultimately we are going to possess, like ghosts, possess Grandfather Bhishma, Dronacharya, and Kripacharya, and make them fight against the Pandavas. And nobody can defeat at least Grandfather Bhishma and Dronacharya. I mean, shoo! Dronacharya could not be defeated. Neither could Grandfather Bhishma unless he put down his weapons. But later on he did put down his weapons. And by some trick, Dronacharya was killed. But anyway, so then Duryodhana came out of his mystic trance and became enthusiastic and went back to the kingdom and got ready to fight. Ayushriyam isho dharmam lokanna sishaya vacha hanti shriyam si sarvani Pumso Mahadatikramaha. When a person mistreats great souls, his lifespan, opulence, reputation, religion, and possessions and good fortune are all destroyed. Remember that. This statement, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.4.46, was made by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit. This quotation concerns the attempted killing of Krishna's sister Yogamaya, who appeared before Krishna's birth as the daughter of Mother Yashoda. This daughter, Yogamaya, and Krishna were born simultaneously, and Vasudeva replaced Yogamaya with Krishna and took Yogamaya away, because Vasudeva took Krishna to Vrindavan and he took Yogamaya back. And when Kamsa saw this little baby girl, even though it wasn't a boy, and wasn't the eighth son of Vasudeva and Devaki, he got so upset that he went to kill her, and she flew in the air. We're going to hear about this. When she was brought to Mathura and Kamsa attempted to kill her, Yogamaya slipped out of his hands. She could not be killed. She then informed Kamsa about the birth of his enemy Krishna, and being thus baffled, Krishna consulted his associates. I'm sorry, not Krishna. Kamsa consulted his associates, who were all demons. When this big conspiracy was taking place, this verse was spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. He points out that a demon can lose everything because of his nefarious activities. The word Maha Atikrama, meaning envy of Lord Vishnu and his devotees, is significant in this verse. The word Mahat indicates a great personality, a devotee, or the supreme personality of God himself. Being always engaged in the Lord's service, the devotees themselves are as great as the supreme personality of Godhead. The word Mahat is also explained by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter, text 13, AMS verse. Mahatmanas tumam partha daivam prakatim ashutaha bhajanchananya manaso gyatva bhutadam avyam. O son of Pratha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the supreme personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Being envious of the Lord and his devotees is not at all auspicious for a demon. By such envy, a demon loses everything considered beneficial. These are very interesting, important instructions for all of us. Gopinatha Charya Gela Prabhu Dararshane Prabhu Tanre Puchila Patacharya Vivarane. At that time, Gopinatha Charya went to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the Lord asked him about the events taking place in Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house. Acharya Kahe Upavasa Kaela Dvijana Vishuchika Vyadika Moga Chadiche Jivana. Gopinatha Charya informed the Lord that both the husband and wife were fasting and that their son-in-law, Amoga, was dying of cholera. Shuni Kripa Maya Prabhu Haila Dana Amogere Kahe Tarabuke Hasta Dia. As soon as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard that Amoga was going to die, he immediately ran to him in great haste. Placing his hand on Amoga's chest, he spoke as follows. Sahaje Niralahi Brahmana Hridaya Krishnera Vasite Yogya Stanahaya. The heart of a Brahman is by nature very clean, therefore it is a proper place for Krishna to sit. Matsarya, that's envy, Chandala Kene Ihanvashaile Parama Pavitrastana Apavitra Kaile. Why have you allowed the Chandala of jealousy to sit here also? In this way, you've contaminated the most purified place, your heart. Sarvamama Sange Tumara Kalusha Hailakshaya Kalmasha Guchile Jiva Krishna Namalaya. However, due to the association of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, all your contamination is now vanquished. When a person's heart is cleansed of all contamination, he is able to chant the Maha Mantra Hare Krishna. Utaha Amogatumi La Krishna Nama Achire Tavara Kripa Karibe Bhagavan. Therefore, Amoga, get up and chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. If you do so, Krishna will unfailingly bestow mercy upon you. So Prabhupada explains that the absolute truth is realized in three phases: impersonal Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. All of these are one and the same truth. But Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan constitute three different features. Whoever understands Brahman is called a Brahmana, and when a Brahmana engages in the Lord's devotional service, he is called a Vaishnava. Unless one comes to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his realization of impersonal Brahman is imperfect. A Brahmana can chant the Hare Krishna mantra on the platform of Namabhasa, but not on the platform of pure vibration. When the Brahmana engages in the Lord's service, fully understanding his eternal relationship, his devotional service is called Avideya. When one attains that stage, he is called a Bhagavat or Vaishnava. So that's the second stage. That's Sambandha, means theoretical knowledge of the different relationships between the tattvas, and Abhideya is acting in terms of that knowledge, and Prayojana means perfection. When one attains that stage, he's called a Bhagavata or Vaishnava. This indicates that he's free from contamination of material attachment. Lord Krishna confirms this in the Bhagavad Gita 7.28, Yesham Dvandakatam Bhapam Jnanam Punyakarmanam Te Dvandva Mahurav Nirmukta Vajanti Mam Tridavrata. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated and freed from the duality of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. A Brahmana may be a very learned scholar, but this does not mean that he is free from material contamination. A Brahmana's contamination, however, is in the mode of goodness. In the material world, the three modes are goodness, passion, and ignorance. And all of these are simply different gradations of contamination. Unless a Brahmana transcends such contamination and approaches the platform of unalloyed devotional service, he cannot be accepted as a Vaishnava. An impersonalist may be aware of the impersonal Brahman feature of the Absolute Truth, but his activities are on the impersonal platform. Sometimes he imagines a form of the Lord, Saguna Upasana, but such an attempt is never successful in helping one attain complete realization. The impersonalist may consider himself a Brahman and may be situated in the mode of goodness, but nonetheless, he is conditioned by one of the modes of material nature. This means he is not liberated, for liberation cannot be attained unless one is completely free from the modes. In any case, the Mayavada philosophy keeps one conditioned. If one becomes a Vaishnava through proper initiation, he automatically becomes a Brahman. There is no doubt about it. The Garuda Purana confirms this. Brahmanam sahasrevyaha Sutra-yaji-vishishyate, sarva-vedanta-paradaha, sarva-vedanta-vitkutya, vishnu-bhakto-vishishyate. Out of many thousands of Brahmanas, one may become qualified to perform yajna. Out of many thousands of such qualified Brahmanas, one may be fully aware of the Vedanta philosophy. Out of many millions of learned Vedanta scholars, there may be one Vishnu Bhakta or devotee of Lord Vishnu. It is he who is most exalted. Very important verse. Unless one is a fully... Let's see how much more we have in this purport. Wow, quite a bit. All right. Yeah, so let's go back. So, I guess, let's see. Yeah, we should just end here. Right here, and then we can take questions. When we'll finish this purport tomorrow. So, does anybody... Actually, I'll unmute you, and I'll stop sharing the screen. So, you are now... officially unmuted. Does anyone have any questions? You can type your questions in the chat window, or you can ask your questions, or you can raise your hand and I will call on you like a teacher. So Gopal Cohn has a question. You can unmute yourself.
Thank you, Gurudev. So regarding offenses to devotees, very often, especially in this age of the internet, we see actually devotees, nice devotees who do a lot of service and chant Hare Krishna and preach and distribute books. Sometimes they also get this nature or mentality or activity. And it also reminds me that Lord Chaitanya says that the demon and the devotee live in the same heart. The nice devotee from this quality that somehow or other he or she is attained and finding fault with other Vaishnavas.
Yeah, so what's the the point is that that's the Kanishtha Adhikari platform. That means Kanishtha Adhikari is a neophyte. Neo. So it sounds like fighting. Neo fight. Neo means new. Fight means fight. So Kanishadakari definitely has envy. Doesn't see the Lord in everyone's heart. Especially doesn't see the Lord in everyone's, all devotees' hearts. And he will have to suffer for those offenses. Whether they're on the... Whoops, you got some feedback there. Whether those offenses are on the internet, whether those offenses are verbal, whether the offenses are corporal, or even if one avoids, let's say, if appreciating a Vaishnava or respecting a Vaishnava when respect is due. So you can offend just by neglect, or you can offend by speech, which includes the internet, or you can offend by doing something physical. Hopefully you'll never do anything physical. So, yes, Krishna will hold the devotee accountable for that. So if someone gets into all these things on the internet, then their devotional service will be held up. They won't lose their devotional service, but it'll be held up for some time. They will lose a certain amount of their taste for chanting and hearing. Depending on the severity of the offense, that's up to Krishna to judge the severity of the offense. So it's quite dangerous. Quite dangerous when one offends a Vaishnava.
So for those bystanders to this activity, how do we relate to these Vaishnavas who may be manifesting some Kanishka behavior?
How do we deal with them? Either we can convince them or just stay away from them.
Then how are we not guilty of neglecting a Vaishnava? We do that.
We just block them on Facebook. Because the point is, if you try to deal with it on the internet, the nature of the internet is that even if you can deal with them and they realize they have made a mistake, which is highly unlikely, you know, I don't think I've experienced that on the internet with social networking, but let's say even theoretically, if you could do that, then you'll get a whole bunch of other people who pile on top of you for saying something or doing something. So my experience on the internet is whenever I've tried to defend someone or myself or anything like that, it just makes the situation worse and there's more offenses committed. Because one of the interesting things about the internet, I was just reading that they have these algorithms that nasty language is, I guess, favored and distributed more, so that there'll be more money coming in from the advertisements, because people like anger, people are frustrated. So therefore, I don't enter into the fray. Just leave the situation, that's the point. You obviously shouldn't do anything like cutting the person's computer tongue out. And you obviously can't defeat them. You don't get into arguments on the internet. It's the worst possible thing for you to do. Arguments. I mean, even they have podcasts where people argue and then they commit offenses against each other. I mean, what's the use? What's the use of all these arguments? Anyway, so you just remove yourself from the situation. I mean, if you like to read about offenses, you're not a force to go on the internet and read those things. I mean, I don't read offenses on the internet. I don't even read comments about anything. I mean, it's all just like a waste of time. At best, it's prajalpa. You know, people make a statement, then you read all the comments about that statement, and then they generally degenerate into ad hominem attacks on the person. Okay, that's interesting. Okay, so now we have Mother Krishna Priya. So you can unmute yourself for a second and ask a question.
Yeah, Gurudev, please accept my obeisances. So I have one point I'm going to speak with you about. Sometimes we might know someone, we have friends, or we know someone who's, they come and they're married, they have children, their husband's not really a devotee, you know, maybe a vegetarian, but not a devotee. And, you know, sometimes the husband will, you know, even see the wife's you know, wanting to be engaged in Krishna consciousness as being in a cult, but then at the same time, you know, the wife, like in the previous days, people just would like leave a situation, leave the kids, leave the family out of stability. And it seems that that's also a test, like how one can do what they need to do to take care of their family, but still be strong in their spiritual life.
Yeah, so there's different, yeah, that's a good point. There's different circumstances. Not that we tell everybody who's married to someone who's not Krishna conscious that, you know, head for the hills or kick the guy out or something like that. It depends on the situation. Like Prabhupada's sister was married to a drunkard who was obviously not Krishna conscious at that time. But he wasn't opposed to, he wasn't offensive.
Right.
See, the difference with the Moga was that he was actually an extremely offensive person. And just to be associated with such a person, it would have actually ruined Sati's spiritual life and actually, you know, whatever, because they had extended families who would have actually ruined Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's spiritual life. So my understanding of this is that you don't leave someone just because the person is struggling or just because the person is not precisely Krishna conscious, as long as the person doesn't interfere with your Krishna consciousness. If the person interferes by being heavily blasphemous, then in those circumstances, or offender to the devotees, and I can think of cases like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just very dangerous. You can't live with someone who's criticizes someone who you love. If you actually love Krishna, for example, let's say someone was married, and they, okay, let's say someone was with their second husband. Is a practical situation. And the first husband passed away, and they had a son. The mother or the wife had a son. And the husband, the second husband, is always criticizing, denigrating the son. How can the woman stay with such a person?
Exactly.
Because it's love. I mean, I think it's a question of love. Apart from, you know, the reaction and all that other stuff. But if you actually love Krishna, how could you stay with someone who's constantly blaspheming Krishna?
Would it be the duty of the wife to first begin and say, you know, I know you don't understand this, and I know it's not the world that you practice, but if you have these doubts and thoughts, it's not something that I want to hear about.
Yes.
Like that.
Yeah, that's what I did with my father. You know, I realized that my father was not really going to appreciate Krishna consciousness for many years. And then what I did was actually tell him that, you know, we're not going to speak about Krishna because obviously... Whoops. Someone is playing music in the background.
Yes, someone's interfering.
Let's see. Okay, I see who that is. I can just mute them. So I told him, I said, you know, it's obvious that you're not appreciating Krishna consciousness. Let's just resolve not to talk about Krishna consciousness. When I'm with you, I'll just talk about Richard Nixon or something like that. Some nice topic. You know, politics. So I think that's the point. As long as one's spiritual life is not being interfered with, or one is not constantly hearing blasphemy or being degraded, then I think one can remain. It depends on the situation. One can remain with the person. All right?
My question. Then what came to my mind when you were speaking just recently with Gopal about the internet. And so isn't that like also like Vajra Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, that if one has a tendency to go online and to read things and comment, that means it's like a message from Krishna that it's self-control. Like you just can't, you know, don't take part in the things. You know, like different people have addictions. So it's one learning not to control the tongue in that way.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, it's a necessary waste of time to just read all these comments on something. Who cares? I mean, it's just like, who cares? You know, if someone's having a fight, why do you have to comment on it? If someone is offending Vaishnavas, why do you have to comment on it? I mean, obviously, if someone comes up to you in the street and starts talking some nonsense, I mean, you may have to have a duty to say something. But why enter into the fray? You know it's going to be negative. And people waste so much time on the internet. I mean, it's better. Like, I'm using the internet. Of course, I use Facebook and other things like that. But I'm just using it to broadcast. And people who want to use the internet properly will just watch what Krishna conscious things they want to watch on the internet instead of just reading all these comments. I mean, even in my classes and everything, most comments are, Jai Guru Maharaj, you're so wonderful, Guru Maharaj. I mean, even though it's not blasphemy in most cases, I mean, very rare, it's just like, should I just like sit and read all the jais and wonderful, you're blissful, you're fantastic? I mean, that's a waste of time. I already know I'm fantastic. I don't have to be told that. I'm sorry about that. I don't have to be told that by... All right, good points. Let's see. Here's, there's more questions. What about offenses by non-devotees of the Lord when preaching? Just go away from the situation. You know, why should it, you know, it's not going to be able to defeat people. I mean, I've seen, especially nowadays, that it's impossible to defeat people. It's Kali Yuga. I mean, sometimes I'm talking to people about completely unrelated things like the health situation about... All right, let's talk about masks, for example. I mean, the scientific information is, and I'm a scientist, or was, the scientific information is if you wear a mask, less germs come out of your mouth. Prabhupada even said that. There's a quote from Prabhupada. Okay. That germs are coming out of the mouth. Prabhupada didn't say mask, he said germs come out of the mouth. Okay. So I found that there are many people, they're anti-maskers. They say when you wear a mask, it'll cause you to get more sick because you'll get your germs back. Which is kind of funny. Or you'll get asphyxiated because you won't get enough oxygen, even though doctors all day long are wearing a mask, and I don't think a doctor's ever died from wearing a mask. So, or even fainted from wearing a mask. So, but my experiences are that even if you present people scientific information, I mean, validated scientific information from doctors, who may even be devotees, people won't change their minds. They're just like, their mindset, especially in Kali Yuga, is into all these conspiracy theories. So I don't waste my time. I just go, you know, Hare Krishna, you have a right to your belief. Hasta la vista, Señor or Señores. So here's another question. Atmanandini, I have a technical question from Ramayana. Was Jamvant present in Rishimukha Parvat? With Sugriva right from the beginning? That is, Jamvant was present when Lord Ram first met Sugriva on Rishimukha Parvat. Jamvant, as the case may be, was constantly living with Sugriva. And Jamvant actually was present on this planet. He was the son of Lord Brahma. He came out of Lord Brahma's nostril, I believe, or something like that. And he was present always with Sugriva, and he was present not precisely... Yes. When Lord Ram met Sugriva, not when Lord Ram met Hanuman. Lord Ram met Hanuman not on Mount Rishimukh, but actually below that, when Hanuman was actually acting as a spy and took on the guise of a Brahmin to see who Lord Ram was. But Jamvant was always with him. All right, one another question. A few weeks ago in one of your classes, you said a Vaishnava who once chants Maha Mantra at least is one who chants Maha Mantra at least once. Today we learned that unless all contamination is gone, we can't be a Vaishnava. Do we reconcile these? Who? How? Of course, it's who. But how do we reconcile these two different statements? Sometimes the word Vaishnava is used in different contexts. You know, a Vaishnava is one who believes in God. That's one statement Prabhupada made at a particular point. Another point, Prabhupada said Vaishnava means pure devotee. So, contextually, Prabhupada is defining the word Vaishnava differently. But basically, a Vaishnava is one who believes in the existence of God, and there's different grades of Vaishnavas, pure Vaishnavas. Oh, here's another one. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, is an offense neglecting Kanishta Vaishnavas or offensive Vaishnavas? No. If someone's offensive, it's not an offense to neglect them. Neglecting in this particular case means don't listen to them. I mean, you still should give them prasadam, still should offer respects in the mind, but as far as making intimate friendships or dealing with them on a constant basis, it's not an offense. How do we reconcile? Oh, that's, yeah, not who. I know, I changed that. How do we reconcile? I know, I understood what you were saying. So, yeah, it's just different contexts. One has to understand the context in which the word Vaishnava is used. Sometimes it means pure devotee. Sometimes it means anybody who believes in God in any religion. Sometimes it means one who worships Vishnu or his multifarious incarnations. And of course, Krishna is the source of all the incarnations. It just means different things in different contexts. You have to examine the context, just like the word God. G-O-D could refer to demigod. Of course, in that case, it wouldn't have a capital G. Like you have a demigod, God, the supreme God, the supreme personality of God, used differently in different contexts. But basically, and actually one time, Prabhupada told a devotee who wrote a letter calling himself a Vaishnava, Prabhupada's a devotee. He called himself a devotee. Prabhupada said, a devotee doesn't think of himself as a devotee, which is actually interesting. Which means we think of ourselves as aspiring to be devotees. Of course, if someone asks us, are you a devotee? If we say, no, I'm just aspiring, it will appear that we're being disingenuous. So therefore, sometimes we can call ourselves devotees. Other times, if we have a fit of humility, which I have every once in a while, we say, I'm not a devotee, I'm just aspiring to be a devotee. Okay, on that happy note, I think we have to end class. We'll see everybody same time, same station tomorrow evening. All glories to His Divine Grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.